Please note, the following story has some mildly graphic descriptions of an animal in labor.
Escape Pod, Episode 783. Report of Dr. Hollomers on the incident at Jackrabbit 5 by T. Kingfisher.
Hi there, and welcome to Escape Pod. I'm your host and co-editor, Myrrh Lafferty. Today we bring you Report of Dr. Hollomas on the Incident at Jackrabbit 5 by T. Kingfisher. T. Kingfisher is the pen name of Ursula Vernon when she writes for adults. She's the author and illustrator of more projects than is probably healthy. She has written over 15 books for children, several novels for adults, an epic webcomic called Digger, and various short stories and other odds and ends. She has won many awards, and when everyone else was wondering if they had thanked everyone in their acceptance speeches, she was ready to deliver an acceptance speech about Whale Fall. And she won that year, so we got to hear it. Look it up, it's on the internet. The story is narrated by S.K. Nash, a writer, editor, and occasional narrator. Raised by a cabal of university professors, anthropologists, and irritated librarians, shields 2 degrees as magical wards to protect her from being hauled back into the ivory tower. Her short fiction has appeared in several anthologies, including Roadkill, Texas Horror by Texas Writers, Volume 2. This was first published in the Escape Pod 15th Anniversary Anthology. I worry about the day an AI can keep up with the constantly shifting language of humans. But until then, we'll keep the humans around, because it's story time.
Report of Dr. Hollomas on the Incident at Jackrabbit 5 by T. Kingfisher. Narrated by S.K. Nash.
The following report is from the Jackrabbit Colony 5 Tau regarding the incidents occurring during 7-5-11-8881 5th rotation involving Marine Midwife Unit 11 Gamma. Incident report has been taken using the eyewitness program from your friends at Taxon Interrogation Software, with explanatory notes added and our new clarification system, saving you valuable time and manpower. At Taxon, clarity is our business. Trademark. This is the eyewitness program from Taxon Programming. I will be taking your report today. Please relax and answer normally. When explanatory notes or clarifications are added, please indicate if they are correct by stating yes or no when prompted. Remember, clarity is our business.
Sure.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Doc Hollow.
Please state your full legal name for the record.
Lynn Hollomas.
Clarification. This is Lynn Hollomas, PhD, DVM, FRCVM.
Yeah, that one.
Current position, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, Jackrabbit Colony.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Hollomas. Please state your purpose today.
Purpose? Ruby told me I had to come down and give a report. Well, she said I had to volunteer to give a report, which is what we call being voluntold.
Clarification. Ruby is Dr. Elowen Rubenstein, PhD, MD, FRCS, FRCMD, retired, currently of Jackrabbit Colony.
Retired, my ass.
Please state. Yes or no?
Yes.
Thank you. Please continue.
Okay, so Ruby says you fellas want a report, and she sends me to do it. I figure this is about the incident. So, 8.5 months ago, the girls who want kids go off the goop together.
Clarification. What is the goop?
Birth control. We're a small footprint colony here on Jackrabbit, planned fertility only. We're extinctioners.
Explanatory note. The Church of the Final Extinction founded on Earth after the 7th mass extinction. Followers believe that human-caused extinctions are the great sin of humanity and vow to prevent further ones, potentially at the cost of their own or other lives.
Let's not get carried away.
They have founded 7 colonies on the principles of low-impact colonization and extensive adaptation to local ecological conditions. The terrorist organization, known as the Arm of the Ammonite, was founded by CFE followers but has been disavowed by the church.
Yeah, we're not with those people. They're nuts.
For profiles of historical followers of the CFE, please consult the archives.
Right. Okay. So, the girls all go off the goop at the same time and get pregnant. Pretty standard. We set up the appointment for the midwives to come around and deliver. 4 women this time. 3 of them take. Poor Mal didn't, but that's neither here nor there.
Clarification. Poor Mal is Melinda Rory, RNP.
Is none of your damn business, that's who. Anyway, the girls who get pregnant all do fine, so far as I know. I'm a vet, though, so I do a lot better with critters that give birth standing up, so don't take my word for it. Ruby says they're looking fine, and Doc Pearson, that's Dr. Reginald Pearson to you, says so too. We got the tech for a bunch of things, but you really want midwives for the deliveries. We're just first and second gen here, 82 people. We can't afford to lose people in childbirth, leaving aside that we'd all be completely wrecked by it. Anyhow, everything goes along fine until a couple of weeks ago, when Harsh gets preeclampsia.
Clarification, Harsh is not found in the records.
Hannah Marsh oversees the colony's waste treatment and recycling.
Thank you. Clarification accepted. Please continue.
I'm trying. So, Harsh is on bed rest, and we radio the midwives to get their asses out here as soon as they can.
Explanatory note. Radio is likely a colloquialism, as the Space Marine Midwife Corps communicates primarily through subspace relay. The origin of the phrase lies with early military communications, which did utilize radio waves. For further information on the history of radio, please consult the archives.
Seriously? Okay. The midwives communicate back that they'll move it up as soon as they can. We can treat mild preeclampsia here, but that shit gets bad. You want a lot more tech to back it up. Once we've got the infrastructure, we'll have a high-tech medical center for this stuff, but small footprint means asteroid mining, not planetary surface, and we're still standing up the power grid. It's all behind schedule because of the fish ladders.
Explanatory note. Fish ladders are structures built into dams to allow wildlife to travel upstream. Small footprint colonies integrate them into all hydropower plans to prevent disruption to established migratory patterns.
They weren't big enough, it turns out. It's an itty-bitty little river. Nobody realized the roller fish bloat up to about 20 times their size when they're fixing to spawn. We've got the parts on back order, but the whole colony's on solar and water wheels until we get sorted.
Explanatory note. Water wheels are primitive structures used to generate rotary motion from flowing water.
We are seriously gonna be here all day if you keep this up.
Please continue.
So, Harsh is drinking so much water she practically floats, but it's not getting much better. I'm starting to worry that I'm gonna be trying to induce labor with a shot I use on the heifers for their first birth, and that ain't my idea of a good time.
Clarification. This would be an illegal act violating multiple statutes, including use of drugs not cleared for humans on a human patient, practicing medicine without a license, endangerment of a patient's welfare, endangerment of,
look, I didn't do it. I wasn't going to do it. Holy prophetess, you machines do not know how to listen to a story, do you?
Clarification accepted. Please continue.
So, the midwives call back and say they're on their way. And thing is, we only got the one building with consistent power, right? We keep everything tucked in together. The freezers and the comm and the med center, which only has 3 beds, and Harsh is in one of them, and poor Bob probably ought to have been in another.
Clarification. This is Roberta Emanuel Preston, current position, agricultural technician, Jackrabbit Colony?
Yeah, Bob. She was manning the comm. She loves talking to passing ships. Between you, me, and the walls, I don't think she was cut out for the colony life. Anyway, she's another one of our pregnant ladies, and she was in the center building on account of her getting just terrible swollen ankles. I mean, really bad. She said it was nothing, particularly given Harsh's problems, but I mean, this ain't a zero-sum game, right? So Doc Pearson and Ruby sorta decided she needed to spend a lot more time in the air conditioning, so they told her to man the comm, right? Normally, we just check it when we expect somebody to be coming in, but we're expecting the midwives any second now, in theory, so it gave Bob something to do that didn't seem like make work. So she's on the comm, and all of a sudden, this weird little ship comes blazing into the system. And Bob is all, unidentified ship, identify yourself, which is kind of redundant, but you know. So the ship comes on the comm, and it is just grainy, old-school, tech-terrible crap from the old diaspora days. The ones that pixelate at the corners if you breathe on the cameras, you know? Except we can't even get cameras until they get in closer. It's that bad. But the visuals we do get, yeah, I mean, it was a weird ship. Looked like somebody took an asteroid, dug it out, and stuck an engine on it, which is pretty much what they did, I guess. I don't know. Small footprint is one thing, but you can take it too far. The ship starts broadcasting its ID, and I mean, this thing is old. It really was from the diaspora. It was so old that the ID numbers had rolled over and Bob's getting it back from the computer that this is a goddamn dreadnought out of New Tillamook, which it pretty obviously isn't, because dreadnoughts are a whole lot bigger. So she has to convince the computer to spit out the ID numbers from the last round of ships, which was 200 years ago, before the altercations. And the computer, meanwhile, is screaming that there's a dreadnought, but also that there isn't a dreadnought, and Bob is screaming at the computer, and Harsh is screaming that if they don't all shut up, she's gonna go sleep in the pig pen where they might at least understand that a pregnant woman needs her sleep, which they don't, incidentally, sows being as much of a pain in the ass when they're farrowing as when they ain't. Harsh knows a lot about hog waste, but not that much about the hogs it comes out of, if you take my meaning.
Explanatory note. Farrowing in domestic pigs refers to the act of giving birth.
Anyway, Ruby hears all this ruckus and comes in and gets everybody settled down, except the computer. Computers being less responsive to sweet talk and death threats, which are Ruby's chosen method of communication. And we're trying to talk to the computer on the asteroid ship, and we can't. This thing is so old, our computers can't dumb themselves down enough to actually talk to them. I'm starting to think we're going to be tapping crap out in binary.
Clarification. At no point was the unidentified ship treated as a hostile?
Shit, no. A ship like that? What are they gonna do, get out and slap us? Anyway, we finally get a live human, but that doesn't help much because he's completely wrecked. Managing about 1 word in every 3 that he tries, and the translation circuits are just subtitling everything garbled, which, you know, we didn't really need a fancy-ass machine to tell us. But finally, he gets out, Cryosleep. And it all makes sense. The computer woke his ass up and he's still got a bad hangover. Frankly, given that, he was doing pretty good. You take me out of cryo and I'm talking backward for a week. But he's obviously in a world of hurt, and we're getting pretty worried. But then some of the other words he does manage to get out is birth and midwife and help. And then it all makes sense. Bob manages to calm him down and get a little bit more out of him, and as near as we can tell, it's just him and one other, and she went into labor and it all went bad. So he did the only thing he could do and slaps both of them into cryo and tells the computer to find him a midwife to save his girl. Problem was, of course, he was way off the main routes and the computer automatically dropped to just under light speed to save power, and the rest of the universe moseyed along without them for a couple hundred years. And the heading he'd set was right through the Kaw Prime system. Explanatory note. Kaw Prime system was one of those destroyed during the altercations. For more information on the altercations, please consult the archives. So he headed for a system that vanished about 20 years after he shut down, but he doesn't know it, and the computer just keeps going. They would have probably kept going clear into uncharted space, but they got close enough to Jackrabbit for the computer to pick up the distress call we sent to the midwives, and the word for midwife is so old the computer still knew it and changed course. The pilot's so screwed up from cryo that he can't run the numbers for the approach, which, I mean, you might as well use a paper and pen with that computer. So Bob's having to do all the calculations for him, and Harsh is like, if I hear one more equation, I'ma set this building on fire. Harsh comes by her name, honestly. And then the midwives make the system, and we got a party. Their ship actually gets here before the other one, despite making the system after, which might tell you how pokey the other ship is being. Great people. Three midwives come screaming down in those little one-man pods. Normally, they'd go slower, come down in a shuttle, but Harsh is starting to take the pre out of preeclampsia, if you get my drift. The pods come down in the lake. Pisses off the fish, but it's a man-made lake, and Doc Pearson and I go get the slap turtles out first, which they don't appreciate, but everybody's in a mood today, so why would the slap turtles be any different? The midwives roll out of the pods. Handles are Squid, Forest, and Angel Eyes, and do not ask me to clarify who's which. On account of, I do not know their real names, just that Squid's in charge and Angel Eyes is a guy.
Clarification. Identification inquiry canceled. Please continue.
Damn straight. They run in to see Harsh. Meanwhile, the pokey little asteroid ship finally gets close enough that we can see it and, Lord, it ain't much to look at, and the pilot's running on coffee and panic, which ain't a great combination, and you figure that coffee was probably 200 years old, so I doubt that's improving the taste much. So Bob talks them down, and the ship lands. Well, you can call it a landing if you're feeling generous, but it pretty much belly flops into the lake. And the pilot skids it over to the shore and falls out into the water. Just one guy, still sketchy as hell from cryosleep. I mean, you wouldn't let him pilot his way to the John in this state. No how should he have been flying a ship, even if it was a hollowed-out asteroid. So he staggers on shore, and he's got a cryo unit that's so old that it still has cooling fans, and the battery on it is so old that it makes Ruby look positively youthful. Weird-ass cryo unit, too. At first, I figure that it's one of those ones where you curl up in position, you know, but it's shaped wrong, even for that. But he's got it on anti-grav boosters, one of which ain't even working, and he has to prop the corner, and he's bellowing that he needs power because she ain't gonna last much longer. So Squid tells him to get the thing inside right away. I mean, we got power at headquarters, enough for two air-conditioned rooms, and Forrest grabs one side of the unit, and I grab the other, and Bob's throwing doors open, even though she can only hobble about with her ankles the way they are. And we get this sucker inside and wipe off the condensation, and damned if it isn't a goat.
Explanatory note. Goat is likely a colloquialism, perhaps a shorthand for scapegoat, which is
no, do not try to explain. It is not a colloquialism. It's a goat.
Clarification. This is a member of the domestic species Capra egregorus hircus?
That's what they taught me in vet school, yep.
Clarification. The distress call was being rendered on behalf of a domesticated goat?
Do you want to tell this story instead of me?
Please state yes or no.
Yes, it was for the goat.
Clarification accepted. Thank you. Please continue.
I'm hardly in the mood now. Why do you have to ruin a good story machine?
At Taxon, clarity is our business.
Do I come into your house and tell you how to do your job? No, but I bet you would, wouldn't you?
Clarification. Question not understood. Please restate.
Never mind. Okay, where was I? Right. So there's this frozen goat, okay? Seriously pregnant, about ready to pop, and the cryo unit is so old that we can't even plug the goddamn thing in. We don't have connectors. You talk about male and female plugs? This sucker's got like alien tentacle baby plugs with three grounds. So squids stripping wires and cussing a blue streak, but we can't do shit. We gotta defrost it while it's still got enough power to wake the patient up.
Explanatory note. Defrost is a colloquial term for waking from cryogenic sleep deprived from...
What kind of freaky-ass bureaucrat you gonna have listening to this report that doesn't know what defrosting means? Or what radio is, for that matter?
Clarification. Recipients of an eyewitness interrogation report are classified.
Yeah, good for them. Okay. So we're trying to get this goat thawed out before the unit dies completely, and the pilot's looking at me like the goat is his bestest friend in the whole universe, and he's got that bad red-eye look like you get from cryosleep, and he is begging me to save his goat. Well, shit. I ain't a monster. Neither are the midwives. We gotta save this man's goat. But Harsh needed to be delivering her baby, like, yesterday, so they've already induced, right? And Bob is sitting there with her ankles the size of grapefruit trying to be helpful, and all of a sudden she gets this mortified look and she's standing in a puddle, and damned if her water didn't break right then. And she says that maybe her backache's been a little more than a backache. But she was busy trying to help this old ship get in proper, so she was kind of deliberately not paying attention and hoping it would go away, and now we got two women in labor and a frozen goat. Anyhow, Squid gives up on the wires, says it can't be done, and we fire up the emergency thaw, which is hard enough on anybody, let alone a pregnant female, regardless of species. But she comes out of the unit pissed as hell and wanting to fight me, only she can't hardly stand up. And at first, I figure she's just woozy from the cryo, but she's having contractions, and the pilot's practically sobbing on her neck, and I realize she's trying to drop her kid, and it ain't happening. I'm figuring the kid's wrong way round. So I'm trying to get my hand inside this goat to get a grip on the hooves and get things started, and damned if Harsh is not having the exact same problem, and the midwife they call Angel Eyes is up in there with forceps, which I happen to know on account of us only having two air-conditioned rooms, as I said before, and me trying to deliver the goat in the same room as Harsh, who had some really cutting things to say about the situation, let me tell you. Well, cutting things to scream about the situation. Women don't give birth as easy as cows, I'll tell you that. Anyway, this goat is not having an easy time of it either. I get a hand in there, and I see right away why the pilot fellow panicked and popped her into the deep freeze. There's way too many legs in there, and some of them are stiff as boards, and some of them are floppy. And of course, any vet knows what's going on with that. I am getting to that. Fine. She's got twins, and one's dead and gone full rigor mortis, and the other one's alive but ain't gonna last too long in there. And the goat's completely exhausted and gone a little floppy herself at this point. Well, the rigor mortis one's in front. They're always in front, because the god of goats thinks it's funny, I guess. And I gotta get it out. And of course, the one in back is wrong way round, because why wouldn't it be? I dunno if you've ever tried to get a stiff kid out of a goat, but it's grim business. You gotta break the bones with your bare hands. Absolute worst part of the job. Nope. I tell a lie.
Clarification. Please state the truth clearly for the eyewitness program. Perjury is punishable under Act 791, subsection A through Q.
Fine. There's worse stuff in the job, but I ain't getting into that here.
Clarification accepted.
So this goat is still royally pissed, for which I do not blame her, because cryosleep is no picnic on top of a dead kid, and she is getting dry as space in there, which does not help the matter. I yell for the lube, and Angel Eyes hands it over. I mean, he's standing practically on top of me on account of Harsh, and hey, it's the same stuff when you get right down to it.
Explanatory note. Medical lubricant used for delivery falls into two major categories, water and oil-based, and is approved for use in both human and animal patients. For more information on the uses of medical lubricant, please consult the archives.
You'll get one hell of an education if you do, I tell you that. So there I am, trying to get this kid into a shape to get out, and the goat decides to kick me in the knees and knocks me over, and I fall into Angel Eyes, which Harsh does not appreciate one bit, granted where his hand was at the time, and Squid is just about to scream to get this goat out of the delivery room, and I'm like, no, it's fine, it's not the goat's fault, and the pilot is sobbing that he can't lose the goat, it's all he's got left of his daddy's farm, and I mean, take a picture, bud, it eats less than a goat. But I can't very well say that while I got my hand all up in this man's goat's business, you know? Forrest jumps in to try to help me. She's with the Space Marine Midwives. She's delivered way weirder things than livestock, but there is just not room for two people up inside this goat. Lord, it was ugly business. So I get the first kid out, and Forrest dives in and takes it outside, and the pilot's sobbing, although he had to know he wasn't getting two live kids out of his goat. And Bob's trying real hard not to complain, but this ain't her first, and she's one of those people who goes into labor, and the kid comes out like he's shot out a cannon, and so she's crowning by the time Forrest is trying to run this dead goat out. So Ruby takes the pilot and a shovel outside, and I think maybe she's gonna kill him, which I gotta admit seemed a little excessive. But by then I had my arm back up in the goat, you know? What am I gonna do? Run after them, dragging the goat on the end of my wrist, yelling, "Don't kill him!"
Clarification. Question not recognized as valid. If you receive this message, please contact Taxon Programming with the question, the time, and the serial number of the eyewitness software being used. Clarity is our business.
Yeah, bet your Taxon people didn't think of the answer to that one. But yeah, they were burying the kid out by the lake. It was real sweet, actually. And the second kid comes out pretty easy once I get it lined up. You can get him out back end first, it's just a pain in the ass for everybody. So I'm pulling, and the kid comes out right as Forrest is coming back in, and she does not know whether to jump to catch me, 'cause I'm falling over with a goat on my chest, or catch Bob's baby. And then Harsh rears up and decks Squid right in the jaw, yelling like a banshee, which could perhaps be forgiven, 'cause this is Harsh's first kid, and you know she ain't been expecting it to hurt like that. And of course, everything was such a mess, we couldn't get in a pain block in her on time, so I'd have maybe done a little punching too, considering the situation. Anyway, Forrest does the right thing and catches Bob's baby, and I'm laying on my back with this kid on my chest, and Squid thinks maybe Harsh needs a little downtime, and she goes and checks on the goat. Goat's not doing too great, but Squid, She gets in there and starts patching things up, and we pump her full of the good drugs. Well, it all worked out. It was touch and go for a while there with the goat, but Squid's good, and the pilot is sleeping in the stall with her. The goat, not Squid. Bob's baby does great, and Harsh pulls through. Her baby's a bit undersized, so the midwives stick around for a few days to make sure she's okay. They requisition my incubator, which means we're having to keep baby chicks under heat lamps for a while, but shit, I don't begrudge that for anybody. Turns out the goat's an old breed, incidentally. Real old, even before spending 200 years in the deep freeze. She and her kid are literally the last two of their kind. The pilot's daddy was an extinctioner, so, you know, they say the universe has a way of sorting these things out. He's staying on the planet, and we've got samples so we can sequence the DNA and keep this breed from going the way of the Percheron.
Explanatory note. The Percheron is an extinct domestic horse breed.
Rub it in, why don't you? And me? Oh, I'm fine. Did a little more falling over in the last few days than I like, but the goat kept the kicking below the knee. Delivered my baby just fine. Little girl. Sweet thing. But Grandma Ruby's gonna do most of the raising of her. She talked me into having the girl in the first place. I'm really a lot better with goats.
Does this conclude your incident report, Dr. Hallamass?
Yeah. You got any follow-up questions? You send a human to ask me, you hear?
Thank you for your cooperation. This incident report has been taken using the eyewitness program from your friends at Taxon Interrogation Software. At Taxon, clarity is our business. Trademark.
Says you.
And that was our story. Ursula tends to write weird stories. Very good, very weird stories. As shown by her many awards. She covers many genres, including fantasy and horror, and tends to write about humble folk who want nothing more than to humbly do their job, and are very reluctant to follow the classic call to adventure. Unlike many heroes, her characters aren't too thrilled about the magical sword, or magically enslaved person, or ancient pregnant goat that falls into their lap. Her heroes are also pragmatic. Even though they didn't ask for the adventure, they will roll up their sleeves and get to work on the problem because the problem stands between them and getting back to work on their humble life. Unfortunately for Dr. Hallamass, the eyewitness interrogation software also stood in her way. The typical hero's journey gives us a character who has a call to adventure, but never jumps right in. They either need to be convinced or forced into it. And I don't know if I've seen many characters more reluctant to answer the call to adventure than in a T. Kingfisher story. They always act as if the main conflict of the story is a big splash of mud on the clean sheets they had just hung to dry, and they need to wash away that mud in order to return to their lives. When a lot of us say we dream of an adventure that takes us far from home, fighting dragons or wizards or aliens or plagues, I believe most of us are secretly like a T. Kingfisher hero, where we would get involved in the adventure for the sole reason that we could get back home into our quiet life. We're still in the midst of a pandemic, and it's hard to ask for donations during this time, but some people are in hard straits and some are not. So if you have a couple of dollars underneath couch cushions, please consider a one-time donation to Escape Artists or becoming a patron of Escape Artists. We know it's a hard time, but it's more important now than ever than to give distractions and a fun story to people every week. And that's what all of our podcasts, Escape Pod, Pseudopod, Casts of Wonders, and Podcasts will do. So donate at escapepod.org or patreon.com/EAPodcasts. Escape Pod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, published under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. All other rights are reserved by our authors. Our music is by permission of Daikaiju, and you can find out more about them at daikaiju.org. That was our show for this week. Our quote comes from Gertrude B. Ellion. Don't be afraid of hard work. Nothing worthwhile comes easily. And we'll see you next week. Go get your vaccine, if you can. Keep washing your hands. We'll get back to our humble gardening way of life soon. In the meantime, try to have some fun.